just the air quality right now. You know, we have really good defensible space. We have a concrete tile roof.
Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone here, and I'd like to call this meeting to order. So please join us and stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We have all our directors here, so we certainly have a quorum. And today, before we begin, and we will be starting with Chief Hollingsworth. Is he here? He is. Okay, there he is. Okay, we will be moving to that. But before we do, we have modified today's meeting, and I'm going to go ahead and have... Do you want to follow Chief Hollingsworth, General Manager Gruber, or do you want to speak to our modified meeting?
No, Madam President, I thought we could outline, if you'd like me to outline what we'll be doing today, I can do that, or we can just go after Chief Hollingsworth directly into the consent calendar.
Okay, I think we'll start actually with Chief Hollingsworth. And before we do, let me just check for... No, we have no request before Chief Hollingsworth. So your time is very valuable to us, sir, and we're very happy to see you, and so we would like to start with you.
Thank you, Madam President and Board. Can I assume that you're wanting an update on the fire? Is that what you're wanting now, or the fire report, or... I could talk about various plays that are happening in the community. Or
why don't you? Well, we always like to hear about the plays in theater, but I think, yes, we want to move.
Okay, so I'm not going to try to regurgitate everything they give us on a regular basis, but just so you guys have an understanding of how we're plugging into this. Since day one, we have staffed our water tender, and it is an active participation of this on a regular basis. They're working 24-hour shifts, and so we have people that actually just cycled a new crew on this morning, so they're going to be there committed for 2 weeks. As of this morning, the current status of the fire, the chimney fire, which is just outside of town, is up to over 43,000 acres. Every day they are setting primary containment lines and then contingency lines, and then due to very erratic wind behavior, topography-driven fire, and the fact that a lot of the fuel is stuff that has not burned in well over 60 years, if not ever recorded burning, at least in the time that we could look backwards, it's making it very difficult to control. So the fire is hitting those containment lines and then automatically jumping them and spotting upwards of a half mile out in front of that. So their contingency plans all the way up in place at this point to actually merge this with the Sobranos fire, which is in northern Monterey County. So that's how far ahead they're looking. They're not planning on it going that far, but it's really dependent on a lot of factors that we can't control. They're standing at about 39% containment. If you've been looking at those updates we've been giving out to the community that we're getting from the IC, you'll probably see that that number has remained relatively unchanged. That doesn't mean they're not making progress. The estimate right now is that they probably have over 200,000 feet of hose on the ground. And what that means, if you do the quick math, that's almost 38 miles of hose that they've put on the ground to get around the fire. And when they talk about containment, they're talking about physical hand lines, wet lines, all the way around the perimeter. So even if they put in 2 or 3 miles of line a day, if the fire is growing exponentially and adding another 5,000 or 6,000 acres a day, that number is not going to change. And so that's why you see that staying relatively the same. Some of the key infrastructure concerns we have in the community is our radio communications, which is up on Rocky Butte. The fire did burn up to that site. They did an aggressive burn operation up there over the last number of days. That's why you saw so much fire on the ground from the hills here, so much smoke. That real strong northwest, west, southwest variant wind that we get blows all that stuff over the hill, and then as soon as it drops over the ridge, it swirls over there, and then the high-pressure variant winds at about 2,000 to 3,000 feet push it back west. And that's why we have such a weird amalgamation of smoke and swirling, and it looks like it goes back over the ocean and it blows back in over the community. So that's what they're dealing with. There's almost 4,000 firefighters working in shifts right now, about 2,000 a day. So they're putting a lot of effort into this. I want to say a personal thank you to Incident Management Team 2 from the state of California, who's actually managing this fire. They've really opened the doors to let us participate in this. I've been over there almost every day. They've brought me in on every briefing, told me everything that was going on for the purpose of acting as a pseudo liaison and getting that information back out to the community. They're taking the fire on this side very seriously. A large percent of the resources allocated to the fire, this turned into a fire engine highway over the last couple of days because there's so many apparatus coming over and fighting on this side. And there's numerous aircraft that are just continuously dropping over here behind Hearst Castle. I think it has something to do with the governor saying, don't let Hearst Castle burn. But that's to be decided. Other than that, they're doing really well. There's only been one moderate injury to a firefighter. And other than that, I think they're doing a great job. We're getting continuous phone calls in regards to concerns from the community and the citizens. And we're telling them pretty much the same thing. It is technically possible the fire could burn down this direction. However, the incident management team, myself, other people involved are not concerned about that right now. It's possible, but it's not probable. None of the conditions are really lining up for that to occur. However, that being said, we're trying to be very transparent in getting that information out there because information is power. And if we get that information out to the community, it allays a lot of the fears of the people that live here. Even though you can look out and see sometimes the glow on the ridge or the fire or the smoke and stuff like that, it's farther away than people realize. So that's where we stand right now, and I can answer questions if you have them.
Go ahead.
And President Robinette, for all the statements and reasons that Chief Hollingsworth had just mentioned, the decision was made out of courtesy and consideration for everyone in the community to really try to limit the duration of this meeting. And with that being said, what we would like to do today is, of course, have the chief's update on the fire, which we've done, and then we could move into the consent calendar, which is items 7A, B, C, and D. We have no public hearings, so we could move into the regular agenda. And out of the regular agenda, there's three key time-sensitive matters that need to be addressed by the board. Number B, 9B, which is discussion and consideration of adoption of Resolution 34216. That's dealing with this suspension or continued suspension of the surcharges. We have item D, 9D, which is the purchasing of the fire engine, which based on what William just said, we definitely need a fire engine. And the third one would be 9E, which is the tracer study. which we green sheeted to the board yesterday. We just got that proposal late yesterday. So that would hopefully minimize the meeting to a reasonable amount of time, and then staff and the folks in the community can go back to focusing on the fire that really is not that far from the community. So thank you.
And just to add to that, and for the board's reference, to the extent that the board wants to adjourn to a new date and time to deal with the items on the agenda that have not been addressed, the Brown Act specifically allows for that in Government Code Section 54955. The board could adjourn the regular meeting to a date and time specific in the order of adjournment and continue then the items that are on the agenda to that date and time. And then for all intent and purposes, specifically under the Brown Act, that adjourned meeting would be treated as a regular meeting. Depending on how far out it is, that there are a couple of provisions in the Brown Act that address that. If it's more than 5 days out, then we would have to post an agenda in compliance with the 72-hour requirement. If it's not more than 5 days, then the agenda that was posted would be sufficient. So just for the board's information as to how with regard to how it may want to proceed, adjourning and continuing the items is something that could be accomplished, and then we would have to post a notice as well on the door of this building within 24 hours, giving the date and time of the notice of the adjournment, rather.
Thank you. And I think we would then move to that at the end of these time-sensitive items. We would have then the time, date, certain discussion with the board and make a decision at this time. I just wanted to also thank you for your time today, and I just had one. I think most of us in the community have been reading as much as we can on CAL FIRE and all the news items we can find. But I was curious about, at one point, there was a very important section that I read, and it had to do with the ash that does float and does settle, and the related toxic feature of some of the ash. And it was very interesting to me, and I don't know if everyone here has seen that, but you might want to speak to it, that if we have pets and things outside or, you know, and there's ash buildup and you get it on your hands, it's my understanding from that article that we want to be very aware and get it off. Could you talk to us about that?
Well, ash is carbon. It is something that is a precancerous type material. Firefighters have one of the largest cancer rates in the United States because of that. And so we have aggressive cleaning policies in regards to how we do that in fires. Even if we have people that are going in and out of a structure fire, we try to change certain elements of the clothing before they even go back in, because constant contact with your skin is what you get it absorbed through. So we try to limit that if possible. So if you translate that to what you're talking about, yes, in theory, washing your hands, washing your pets if they're outside. If you have animals that can be brought in, like cats or dogs, to wash them and keep them inside for the duration, it would probably be beneficial. I'm not a veterinarian, but that would make sense in regards to keeping them healthy and safe.
Thank you. I just wanted to share that because I know there are so many of us that do have pets and and different things, that animals, that we would want to be aware of that. Do we have any further comments or questions for Chief Hollingsworth from the board? Following his comments. Okay, Chief, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Before I call up for a public comment, I also wanted to give credit to Director Rice. She, yesterday, I thought was very... certainly very perceptive, and our sensitivity to adjusting this meeting, I think, has to do with our own relationship with our neighbors to the north up on San Simeon Road and a bit north. And it's a unity kind of thing and a support kind of thing. And so that's why we made the decision that we all care And we just wanted that to be a part of the sharing of today. So I just appreciate that. You can tell from my voice that I am truly responding to the smoke. I don't know if anybody else sounds about like I do right now, but I see people smiling and shaking. But clearly it's here with us, and it's having an impact on us too. Okay, so we have then public comment on item 2, and that was Chief Hollingsworth, Tina Dickinson.
Good afternoon, Board. Tina Dickinson. I am absolutely and totally perplexed that a director of this board would post on a Facebook page that she felt, and in her message to the general manager yesterday, that this meeting should be postponed, canceled, or whatever. We've been getting updates all the time from CAL FIRE, from our chief, from Chief Hollingsworth. The general manager had a statement that everything was fine in Cambria. If there is such a problem, this amount of people is nothing compared to what is show up at the Cookie Crock or Lynn's Restaurant or Robin's, and none of them are being asked to close their doors or minimize their hours. I think it is absolutely a farce that we are being told that this has to be moderated and minimized. If there was indeed an issue, I called Chief Hollingsworth this morning. Director Rice had never even called him. He would be the one to indicate to this town that there was an emergency. He would coordinate with the general manager and you, President Robinette. It would not come from a posting on a Facebook from a director. And I'm appalled that that's the way this board is choosing to govern and our general manager in this way. I would say that water is a huge issue. No reservoirs, something I recommended 3 years ago. We have none of that. And I think that by just telling the folks here who've made plans to come to this meeting that you can't speak at public comment, you were going to go right to the consent calendar, and that this has just happened because one director posts on Facebook is ridiculous. This is not governing. This is not governing at all, and I object to it because I do not see an emergency where this meeting had to be minimized or moderated to last for a couple of items. Thank you.
I appreciate your opinion. I would like to speak to that. I think that it is not to suggest we're having an emergency, and in fact, Chief Hollingsworth and every place we read is very clear. We as a community are not in emergency. It's not about that. It is about a show of unity. It is about a show of compassion. And it is about a show of everyone in this community is feeling the effects of where we are facing a very serious situation with fire. The Board of Supervisors, in fact, it was again Director Rice that had noted that the Board of Supervisors did a very similar thing. And so I think it's more a message we're sending to everyone. It has nothing to do with, are we sitting here in a dire emergency? That was never the message. Okay, thank you. So then, we will go with the suggested agenda.
I have a public comment on 5.
On 5. We were going to go just, we're at item 4. And then that will follow and I will have you. So I did want to know then, for the consent agenda, are there any items that we were going to pull?
I have 3.
Seeing none. Director Rice?
Just on agenda review general and not consent, I just was curious as to why 9B was a time-sensitive item.
Well, it's not on consent agenda. It's on the regular.
So agenda item, agenda review is the only time when we have an opportunity to
just for consent
to ask.
Agenda, the items that are on
I
the
see.
Consent agenda.
Madam President,
yes.
It is agenda review, deletions and pulled comments. I mean, can we not? It appears that it has been determined by the general manager and the president that this meeting be made brief, and I'm sensitive to the fact that the county, their jurisdiction is the whole county, and they had constituents that might not be able to participate at that meeting as well. On the other hand, our community is only 2 miles long, and we have a lot of people that have come here for comment. And I think it speaks that it makes it look like we're, a lot of people think that we're a government, where in fact we're just a water and sewer district. And I was hoping that we could fulfill our full agenda, but given the fact that we could in fact reschedule again has alleviated some of my concerns. But I do know a lot of people were planning on making comment, and if there's an agenda item, I think that we should have on there is public comment. I can't see how we can jump over that without
on the items we're addressing, we won't be jumping over public comment. No, right. No.
With that said, fine. I don't have any adjustments.
Good for that clarification.
I don't have any adjustments at all.
Okay, good for that clarification. Thank you. Okay, then we are to, at this time today, the items that we are going to go through, as was mentioned earlier, we are going to do the consent items. We are going to then move to item 9, and we are going to take up item B, D, and E. So that's what we're doing. Okay? Are we good? Yes. Yes, we will. Okay. We do have some request for public comment under general, not on the agenda today, but other jurisdictional things under public comment on item 5. So we do have, let's see, we have Lanny Zaragoza under item 5. Welcome.
I'm Lanny Zaragoza, and I'm also the crazy Pine Dorado Parade chairperson. And
David.
I'm here today to say thank you to Jerry Gruber and Carlos Mendoza for helping me with this parade. It's a really big event for us. And they have been so supportive, and they are actually providing the transportation for the very first Special Olympics float that we've ever had. It's going to be led by the Sheriff's Posse, the Viper, and one of their Humvees that search and rescue, and then this big float. And it would not have been possible without their help. And we tend to go through our day and not stop and say thank you to people that do nice things for us. So here I am. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we're looking forward to the parade, too, and all the work you put into it. Okay, next on item 5, Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Madam President. I would first of all like to thank immensely 4,000 fire workers who are doing a fantastically difficult and excellent job. So I would, on behalf of the entire community of Cambria, thank all those people, I'm sure. I would like also to say that some of us look out the window and see Rocky Butte and get a little upset. And so I know that there's no emergency, but an emergency pending is a very worrisome possibility. And whether it's pending, possible, or probable, it's an alliterative problem, certainly, but I think it is also a real problem for us emotionally. So I thank the fire department for keeping us up to date all very regularly. It's not clear to me what is on the agenda today other than those numbers, and so I assume I should not talk about any of those things, but I could well then talk about the general manager's report, except I assume that's being postponed, which you'll do at the end of the meeting, so I can't really know what's on the agenda except those items. But I want to raise something that's not on the agenda in any event, and that is the question of the announcement to the public about water production and about water usage by you, the board, and the staff. I would like to know the accurate numbers of water production up to the last 2 weeks, at least. In fact, I think that's in your regulations, that that it has to be read that frequently. But tell us. I did some math, and I won't bother you with all the details of the math. Compared to January, February of this year, and May, June of this year, we have used much more water than we've produced. We've used about 4 million gallons. We've produced 4 million gallons and used 6.7 million gallons of water. I want to know why. I know that we have over the whole period a variation of use and production, but we need to see regularly, Madam President, the production of water and the use of the water on the same page, as well as the effect on the well levels. As you well know, Madam President, that is required by your reporting to the state and the region already. You don't have to put more work on the staff. Those things are required reporting. There's much required reporting that still needs to be done, and that will be on the agenda whenever you bring it up again, I'm sure. But my last point is not on the agenda. Given the water usage and production statistics for this district, it is totally unclear what the meaning of the word conservation is in this district. You have no policy on conservation. I have told you that before. I have been waiting with proverbial bated and now very smoky breath, even more than my three packs a day decades ago. But I have been waiting, and it's still not there. What is your policy on conservation in relationship to production and usage? And an aspect of this will come up again when we look at surcharges later this afternoon. Thank you very much, Madam President.
Thank you. Okay, still public comment on this item. Lou Blanc.
I'm Lou Blanc, former board member from the late 90s, licensed geophysicist, geologist, engineering geologist, hydrogeologist. I wanted to thank the board to let me speak. I don't have much time lately. I've been taking care of a 95-year-old World War II veteran father who was a federal judge for three decades, and he's up here with me right now, so I'm happy to have him here visiting. I wanted to mention that I've had the pleasure and honor of being able to buy breakfast for a few of the visiting firefighters in some of the local restaurants, such as the Redwood Cafe. It's pretty obvious that they're firefighters because they reek of smoke from coming right in off the lines and literally chunks of charcoal falling off of their clothes. As they're sitting there eating their breakfast, and I would certainly encourage everyone to extend our Cambrian hospitality to all these fine people that are saving us right now. It's a little scary that we're one strong Santa Ana wind from watching this fire turn and march to the sea right through town. And so I would like to get back to something that came up when I was on the board. And back in 1997, I proposed five reservoirs that have a dual purpose, not only to get us through the dryness of the summer, but also as a source of water for the helicopters to dip out of to help control wildfires. We don't have those yet. People before me proposed reservoirs, not five, but I did propose five. People after me have said they were going to get those done, and I haven't seen it happen yet. So as we sit here without those reservoirs, I'd like to encourage this board to look at the facilities they do have and prepare them immediately to be repurposed as reservoirs to pump for helicopters to dip water out of in case we need them. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, this it says so, agenda item 10. All right, we're not having item 10. Well, that's at the end, but let's have you come now because we're still within the time frame of a half hour. So certainly, Mike Lyons, come on down.
Good afternoon, everybody. These comments might have been more appropriate after addressing item 9, but now that I have the chance to speak, I'm glad to do it. Once again, I want to praise this board for their accomplishments and educations, including what many of you have said to me about having to re-educate yourselves about the important subjects that we have addressed in the community over the last decade or so, particularly water. It's like going back to graduate school all over again, and we thank you for doing it now that you're experts in this field. Also, I would like to thank the staff for the excellent work they do and on a daily basis, and at the direction of the community, we thank you very much. I would like to say that I'm not particularly looking forward to the upcoming election, even though I think we must do this and we must get through the EIR application and try to get a permanent solution to our water problem. There are a couple of several words that bother me that I hope we don't hear too much of. One is the transparency in accusing the board of lack thereof. A second one is secret meetings, which we all know are against the Brown Act, and we have about 6,000 pairs of eyes in this community watching to make sure there are no secret meetings. Hidden agenda is another phrase that I don't like to hear. And the last one that I can think of off the cuff is unrestricted growth. I would ask respectively of all of the critics of this board and the staff, respectfully, that if they use these words, do so by backing it up with solid proof. I don't want to hear just the accusations hurled. Until I hear proof, you won't hear any agreement from me to even consider your opinion seriously.
Thank you very much. And I know. We are having these, and so I've gotten that ready. Excuse me, because they're keeping things going here. Maybe I'll turn that over to you if you can.
You got it.
Okay. All right. Next up on public comment, Christina Tobin. Hello.
Hi. My name's Christina Tobin. I didn't really plan to speak today, so I'm just kind of speaking from the heart. I wanted to really, of course, the fire situation is just a really heartfelt, serious thing, and I think it is important to come together in unity, and I'm really grateful for the firefighters and all the people out there doing great things to hopefully put that fire away. And so I love this community so much, it's scary to think that something like that could happen, possibly, hopefully not. So, but I wanted just to speak briefly. I think that what I feel today is such a disconnect still between the people and the board members. And I think it's important to open up conversation, have more dialogue. I've always been a believer in the last 20 years in the electoral reform arena that with great communication, that's how we can bring about solutions. Not go into character people, but focus on the questions, the solutions, and I think that's something that we need to have more of. So I'm announcing that my organization, Free and Equal Elections, will be hosting a candidates forum here in Cambria, and we will be announcing the date and time, location, very soon in the Cambrian and other alternative media outlets, hopefully Slow Stringer, the Cambrian, Cambria Currents, and so on. So I do welcome everybody to be on the outlook for that forum, and I will be co-moderating that with a friend of mine and ally that really believes in bringing, inspiring people to run for local elections in Cambria, Mr. Ed Asner of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Emmy Award-winning actor. He's a pretty cool guy. And finally, I just want to also say there are 7 candidates running for the CCSD board. Of course, we have 3 incumbents up for re-election, Greg Sanders, Gail Robinette, and Amanda Rice, and 4 other candidates by the name of, hope I get it, Harry Farmer, Dwayne Lee, and Tom Kirky, and the gentleman right there,
Jeff Walters. I always get the last name a little wrong. So those gentlemen, and I'm just for more voices and more choices. So I welcome all seven candidates that are running for the CCSD board, incumbents and four new candidates to be a part of that candidates forum. So please expect an invitation, and thanks for your time.
Thank you. Director Sanders?
I have a question of Christina Tobin, if she wants to step back up to the... Haven't you and your organization already taken a position on two of the candidates?
No, that's a great question. I stand as an individual. As an individual, that's separate from the organization. And Free and Equal Elections is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. It's had its C3 status that was founded in 81. So the organization itself puts that hat aside. In fact, I moderated a presidential debate, really a forum these days, be doing at CU Boulder as well in 2012, where there were four presidential candidates, Libertarian, Green, Constitution, and American Independent Party. And while I have my personal viewpoints, I sat next to Larry King and came from a very nonpartisan hat as a representation of the Free and Equal Elections Foundation. Thank you, though, for that clarification.
Well, didn't you and your organization take out an ad in the Cambria? And didn't that ad take a position against two of the candidates?
The concerned Cambrians took that ad, but not the Free and Equal Elections Foundation.
But it was paid for by the Free and Equal Elections Foundation, according to the ad.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so I would...
I feel that the ad was just simply expressing the truth and the facts, that's all.
Okay, so you would expect two candidates against whom you have already taken a position...
That's not the case. It just spoke the truth.
Okay, to consider that...
We need to move on with
unbiased. We do need to move on.
Okay, well, I doubt you'll have the two.
Because you're all personal attacks. Let's come to a forum and be part of a forum and answer questions to the people.
Okay.
You're welcome to come. As long as you don't attack people there, you will not be asked to leave like you're doing here.
Thank you both. Elections around the corner. Whoa, whoa. okay, do we have any other requests for public comment on item five? Yes, and here it is, Ms. Dickinson.
Tina Dickinson, Mr. Lyon has every right to have his own opinion, but so do each of us. And I couldn't disagree more with what he had to say. If this meeting today is any indication of how this board conducts its business, then I would strongly urge Cambrians to look very carefully at the possibilities of candidates running who afford a welcome change, I believe, in my opinion. I work 8 hours a day, trust me. I work on the other side of the dais, and you can't believe the stuff that I find, because I dig in, and I have the answers, and I'd like to meet with anyone in this room or anyone in this town that has more information from the regulatory agencies regarding what you guys are doing, what you have been doing, what you claim to be doing, because I will take you on any day with what I have, factually based information, emails, I've got it all. And so it really bothers me when I hear Mr. Lyon say he doesn't want to hear the word transparency. That's exactly what I want to see. I don't want to see meetings behind closed doors, BRP meetings having closed sessions with the ad hoc committee. I don't want to see that. I want to see people being treated with respect who come to this podium, as I do many times and others. We are not treated with respect. Look what just happened with Director Sanders and Christina Tobin. That's a fine example. This is not a courtroom of law to interrogate someone. I simply can't accept it. And Cambrians, start taking a good look at your choices for November. I would ask the Mr. Gresham through the board, the president, why have we not had any well-level readings since August 1st? Why do we have no production numbers for the month of July? That's something we should expect. We shouldn't have to ask. And I did put in a slip for item number 3 on the agenda, but I guess what happened with that, President Robinette? I had an item speaker slip for item 3 on balanced public relations. You Did you just skip to number four?
We did not take up item three today.
Okay, so does that mean we're not allowed to speak on it, or are we allowed to speak on it because it's not on the agenda today then?
It's not on the agenda.
Really? But yet it's in the agenda packet. I don't know how you legally...
It's not modified.
But I'd like legal counsel to tell me how come I cannot speak on something that's actually not on the agenda but is on the agenda. Could legal counsel address that, please?
It will be taken up at the
Could meeting. Legal counsel address it? You're not a lawyer.
I think we're devolving into accusations.
I'm asking if I can speak on an item that I submitted a slip for.
Madam President, 3 minutes is up.
I would ask that you stop. Time is up. And time is up. Thank you.
You didn't answer the question.
Thank you.
This is why we need a new board, folks.
I think let's not do this today. This is not a political meeting. I don't know how we're getting off on politics, talking about candidates, talking about people by name. We are better than this, and I think we need to stay in that place. Okay, so that is the end of public comment on that item. Do we have... He doesn't have a number on here. Okay, we usually spend 30 minutes on this, but you are the last one, so we won't carry you over to the end, of course.
I'll try to be as brief as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time. I just wanted to speak again on, well, what everybody is near to dear to all, but everybody's hearts is water here in Cambria, of course. Specifically water, fire, and wildlife, in particular also the wildlife that's probably feeling a great deal of impacts from the current fire that we have right now. That in specifically, I spoke about wildlife crossings a couple months back. Also, with the pressure of fire, you're going to find more wildlife crossing roads, things like that, and the roads become very much a danger and a disadvantage to wildlife. Wildlife crossings have proven effective in keeping wildlife from being damaged on roads and so forth, and one of our local, shall we say, within the state, practices that they're in is in San Bernardino County, where they've experienced a great deal of worthwhile effect from having wildlife crossings in place to protect wildlife. I just wanted to address that to the board and have them consider possibly at least citing a resolution, possibly for consideration by the county to have wildlife crossings addressed here in Cambria specifically because of our very sensitive wildlife community here within our community. And just wanted that to be considered and thought about. Again, that is about having to do with the fire as well. As far as on the water issue, we all know that we need more water in order to both fight fires, improve our wilderness infrastructure. And to that end, my also consideration is also I think that we ought to be looking into more, also considering the very sensitive nature of our ecology here, looking more into atmospheric water reclamation, seeing as how desal seems to be more or less a dead issue with a lot of the people here because of environmental concerns. Atmospheric water is definitely a worthwhile and viable consideration for gaining water. There is actually a atmospheric water unit currently in place at Soto's Market. If anybody wants to try and check it out, it's a delightful little thing that produces water right from Cambria's air. And it's in place in Soto's Market and working right now, and people usually find the water itself quite delicious. But beyond that, it also, I think, could be a beneficial and advantageous addition to the discussion in how we can gain water for recharger here in Cambria and start using it here within our municipal systems. Beyond that, I'd also like to say that maybe acquiring water technologies for a sustainable Cambria and the adoptions that you're about to consider for the agenda items, could you consider an adoption and discussion of a resolution to allow for private water reclamation of residences or proposed residences to continue to become a part of the community with a variance for water collected for non-groundwater sources and from sources that are not on the grid to specifically allow for a variance for residences? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, that is the end of public comment on anything in our jurisdiction except items on the agenda. So we will move now to the consent agenda. And we had no items pulled from the consent agenda. Any clarifying questions you need to bring up? But otherwise, we're ready for a motion.
I move approval of the consent agenda.
Second the motion.
Okay. It has been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda. No further discussion? Okay. Very good. I think we'll take a roll call vote, please.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. Okay, consent agenda is approved 5-0. Thank you. And now we'll move then to item 9. We do have three items on item 9 that we're going to take up for action today. And so we will start then with 9B. And General Manager Gruber, if you'll please introduce item 9B.
Thank you, Madam President and board members. Item 9B is discussion and consideration of adoption of Resolution 34-2016, extending the suspension of enforcement of surcharges, penalties related to the water conservation measures, restrictions on the use of potable water, and the maximum water use allotments. Recommendation is the board discuss and consider the adoption of the resolution and extending the suspension of enforcement of surcharges, penalties related to the CCSD's enhanced water conservation measures, restrictions of the use of the potable water and maximum water use allotment, and staff is asking through October 31st, 2016. Just a brief history on this. The board suspended surcharges as indicated in the staff report, and we're asked to bring this back periodically to you based on the amount of water that is being used by the community. We're still relatively low at about 63%, and so if you don't take action on this, the surcharges will automatically go back into place. Patrick did a really good job in outlining from March-April billing cycle of 2014 to March-April of 2016, the penalty surcharges, the adjustments, and the net gain from that. But again, I think the board has indicated that they are in support of a continuance on the surcharges being suspended based on the use of trends of the community. So with that, I can answer any questions if you'd like.
Okay, thank you. We do have a request for public comment, so let's move to public comment now on 9B. We are on 9B, and that is Tina Dickinson. But before you come, just it's not about you. I won't start the time yet. It's my timer ready, just about. Mr. Schwartz, Crosby, you had requested public comment on 9A. We will be bringing that up at the continuance meeting, so can we hold this for you? Okay, thank you. So I didn't want you to think I hadn't seen it. Yes, because we're only going to be discussing 9B, 9B, 9D, and 9E today before we go to scheduling the completion of this meeting for a different date. Let's hang on to this. Okay, so now on 9B, we'll move to public comment, and that is Tina Dickinson.
I need to put it in the password.
Thank you. On 9B, I didn't get an answer to the question that I raised on how many acre feet were produced in July. So does the engineer have an answer to that? That is relevant to what is in this item. Could I get an answer on July's production?
Did you have more on the comment, or you just want to leave it at that?
And then I already asked the question before.
At the end of your comment, he will respond to it. If you have more to say,
all right,
he'll hold it.
So my concerns, as I've outlined in previous meetings, is we have an issue with revenue. It's very clear from this month's packet that we were down to about 2 million. We had a 4.16 million added in from the Prop 84. But as I said then, we'd already spent that money, and now we're already seeing the effects of the money we owed. So if we want to bring in some revenue, this is a perfect way to add to our revenues and to also have an incentive to those who are using still tons and tons of water. While most of us have really done an amazing effort, why would we not expect those who are using beyond, way beyond what is needed, to pay for it? Why would you not think that that is a reasonable means of getting some revenue in and also curtailing maybe their use a little bit and bringing it back down to where most of us are? I don't understand this. I never have, and it doesn't seem to be very good finance or bookkeeping practice in my estimation, and we certainly could use the revenue. I would ask again if we've got that number on the acre footage for July by now. I mean, we are at the end of August almost, and I'm asking for July's production. President Robinette, can you get an answer for me? I'm looking directly at you.
I have responded that you ask first a question of Mr. Gresham, and he may want to respond to the first question. Go ahead and finish your comments, and then we'll respond.
It's very difficult. And again, if you guys can't do better than you're doing, Cambrians,
thank you very much for your kindness.
Please think about what's happening and what will happen in November, because this is ridiculous.
Thank you for your kindness. Mr. Gresham, do you have a response to her observations and questions?
I was trying to look that up for you right now, so if you give me a second, I'll see if we do have it. At the time that the staff report was written, the Water Department hadn't had a chance to update its spreadsheet. So if you want to give me a minute, I'll check and see if I have that number that I can present, you know, just verbally right now.
Well, we need to move on, and okay. So when you have that, you can go ahead and share it at that time.
I'll
okay.
Jerry's telling me to jump up and just shout it out if I find it, but I will search for it. You know, it just takes a while for the Water Department to update its spreadsheet after they collect the data in the field, and I think it was just a time lag between that information going in the spreadsheet and when I was writing that particular staff report section and putting those graphs together. So.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, there's no further comment on item 9B, so... What's over there? Okay.
Here they come.
Ah, okay. Okay, it must be in the mail. Okay, thank you. On 9B, thank you very much for your patience on that. Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Madam President. I'm Elizabeth Bettenhausen, a full-time resident of Cambria for about 14 years or so. And I thought there of teamwork and watching the Olympics. Some teams work effectively to get the ball around, and some people are a little more slightly delayed. I want to address a topic here that leaves me a bit baffled in some ways, because I'm ignorant of your criteria by which these judgments are made. If you look at page, glasses, I can't wear bifocals, 101, okay? If you look at surcharges and adjustments, you will find that in a fiscal year, basically, you have $1 million if you charge surcharges and don't award those adjustments. My question is, in relationship to the surcharges, but it's explicitly about adjustments, pardon me, I'm so tired after all the smoke and everything, what in the hell are adjustments? I've asked this of your finance officer a year ago already, and I think if I recollect accurately, adjustments are what the general manager decides to make to bills. What were $258,000 worth of adjustments about, namely reducing what you have to pay? Now, I'm not saying it's not meritorious to do that, blah, blah. I'm saying I want to know. Who was adjusted and why? What kinds of decisions are these? So if we had surcharges and if we had the adjustment sort of wiped out for a while, we'd have over $1 million to spend on all the things that you need to spend it on. You can't see from what's here on this page, but you can if you look on page 32 of your finance op, but it's not on the agenda today. There is no usage trend particularly except up in water use here. Surcharges might keep it going down. Or maybe you need it to go up because, as we've talked about over the years and years, you need the revenue, et cetera. You need a plan to show how surcharges, conservation, revenue requirements, rate increase, all of that works together. Now we've got a piecemeal thing that looks like some of the ineptitudes of Olympics players after they won their medals and went out for a night on the town. We don't need that kind of behavior. We need behavior that is focused on policy to the advantage of all Cambrians. And that includes MONEY when it comes to rates, and it includes conservation when it comes to things like I just found a dead leopard shark the other day, and I also found a thornback on the beach, and I also saw a coyote on the beach. And every time I get up here, I hope that they are somewhat grateful that I try to represent their perspectives as well, probably more than inadequately, but I try. Thank you very much, Madam President. My question is, what do you want? How come you don't want the $1 million?
Thank you. I believe we have a response to your inquiry.
Yeah, Madam President, members of the board, members of the public, especially people on TV who can't look at this. The chart shows for 2 years and 4 months a total of $770,000 in penalties. If you divide that out, that's about $400,000 a year, not a million, it was just stated. The refund, you know, adding is not that hard. The adjustments are provided when people use water, mostly leaks. They come to us and they have to pay the cost of the water, but we don't, the first time that it occurs, we forgive the penalties that were charged. We had one customer here that used over 500,000 gallons. One customer and a two-month billing period. His charge alone was over $35,000. We did waive that. That's our policy. It's not the general manager doing it. It's me. It's a reasonable policy. It's supported by the board, and that's where these adjustments come from. A lot of people have issues with water leaks and that sort of thing. We're not trying to be punitive. We're trying to incentivize people to not use water. And when they have an individual single problem with a broken water pipe or something like that, we forgive it. That's where they come from.
Thank you for the response. Okay, we have another public comment. Sherry Bell.
Sherry Bell. I'm also confused as to the possibility of extending the surcharges. And I think the explanation that we just received as far as a broken water line, that makes sense if it's an accident. But if that is at 100% of the bills or the water usage that's being written off, is it just those that have to do with broken water lines? Or are there just not from overuse? So, for instance, if you have a business that exceeds the amount of their allocation or which they would ordinarily have before being penalized or fined, is the breakdown, could you say, what percentage of the surcharges were for businesses and what percentage was for individual users? And also, are the broken water lines, is that the majority of the of the water usage that is that where the surcharges are being waived. Because otherwise, I see it as an opportunity to put some money in the coffers, which we obviously need. So unless were all of those $400,000 a year was strictly for broken water lines, then I think we should know what's behind the thinking on this. How are you coming to a conclusion as to whether to extend it or to eliminate it? Because we need the money. And if it is being from people that are over businesses and people who are using more than their allotment, then if they should be penalized in the form of a fine, in my humble opinion. So I just would like to have you think about what is it? Is it broken water lines? Is it businesses? Are there homes that are so far exceeding their usage? We really don't know. And perhaps that could be addressed as well. But in any case, I would like to see I would not like to have this extended. I would like to have go back to the way that it was, where you were charging for overuse. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, seeing no further requests for public comment on item 9B, we will move now to discussion of the item. Director Rice.
Thank you, President Robinette. We did ask the general manager to bring this back for review, but I don't believe this was done in a way that makes it easy for us to not spend a lot of time on it, which would be to send it to the Ad Hoc Conservation Committee first to go over all the numbers and look at what our supply is looking like. We are still in a state-declared drought. We are still in a stage 3 emergency. We now have this fire at our door, and the recommendation, even with the situation of people using less, causes us to lose revenue. We suspended the surcharges. I didn't get an answer as to why this is time sensitive, except that you said that the general manager said they would automatically go back into effect if we take no action. So I would move that we would table this item until like the October meeting, so that we can have a committee meeting, go over the numbers of what our supply looks like and what's changed between the time when we implemented them and what's going on now, because I don't think this is going to affect very many people in town or very many businesses. If we're at average of 63% use, we probably are not talking about too many customers, and that seems like something that would be a very good thing to like get into the weeds with a committee report, who could then come back and make a recommendation like the committee did last time, which was to make a recommendation to not lift the surcharges, and then the full board took the direction to lift them and have the general manager bring it back. I think this is a really important issue, managing our water and the water use. This town uses very little water. I'm very proud of how much people have managed to cut back and really not very much complaining as much anymore, because they realize how much water 50 gallons per person per day is. So that would be my comments on this item.
Thank you. And Director Bowinger?
I've got a couple of comments later, but I think it's worth discussing that I have seen some of the requests for surcharge eliminations, and the vast majority are individuals who have had, it's not always a broken pipe, but it's a toilet that overran and somebody was out of town for a week and they did the calculations, and we're still charging the basic charge for water, I believe. And so the water they're using, it's just the unfortunate accident that happened to a person is what is being waived. I would bet, I'd like to get actually an answer that says about how many of these are commercial, and I'll bet it's extremely low, if any at all. Would would the president perhaps ask Mr. Patrick to comment on that, or Mr.
Do you have that the commercial versus residential? I have a sense that commercial, certainly restaurants, are really watching it.
I don't have firm numbers, but my observation is that the vast majority of the penalties are paid by commercial establishments. They recognize that to operate they need to use water, and they just absorb the cost. It's not many residential.
And do they ask for forgiveness?
No. No, they understand it's a cost of doing business.
And you, in your recollection, you rarely or if ever have...
We've had a couple of businesses that refused to pay, but that's a whole different issue.
Right.
You know.
Right. But it isn't included in this forgiveness list.
Well, if... I don't recall. If they had had an accident and they had asked for forgiveness, we would have, but I don't recall one.
Okay.
Doing that.
Thank you. That's a good clarification on that. And I believe the reason the general manager brought that up, that if we don't take action today, August 31st, it automatically goes to, becomes in mm-hmm. force. And I think that that's a... And then if we analyze it again next month or whatever, it's going to put people into an area of confusion. I wouldn't be against making it September 31st, so at least we can... September 30th, so that rather than October 31st. But I think October 31st is reasonable. So I support the action.
Okay, so you're saying you support continuing the...
Yes, I do, as discussion.
Oh.
As part of the discussion, I support that we make the extension, and we... I would go so far as to move that we adopt Resolution 34-2016 extending the suspension of the enforcement of surcharge penalties related to the water conservation measurement restrictions on the use of potable water and maximum water use allotments through October 31st, 2016.
I'm going to second the motion and just add a comment or two. I recall looking at the request for relief from penalties and surcharges. I don't recall any commercial customer asking for relief. They've, to my knowledge, they've all been from residential customers. And the problem is, this is a one-size-fits-all kind of regulation that sweeps people into it with unintended consequences. There are requests for relief that, if not granted, would have bankrupted the person who asked for relief, certainly would have dispossessed them from the home they were living in. So I think we have to be very sensitive to that. The second thing is the purpose of the penalties and the surcharges, as Patrick very well stated, is not to raise revenue. Mm-hmm. It's to incentivize people to conserve water. Initiated this action to do away with the penalties and surcharges on the basis of our experience, if you will, that Cambrians, by and large, are very responsible people. They conserve water, and that has turned out to be the truth. And so I'm very confident that if we extend the relief from penalties and surcharges, that we're going to experience going into the future the same that we've experienced for the past several months, and that is the use of water in this town is going to continue to be relatively flat. So I second the motion.
Okay. You go ahead next, and I have something to
share. And I would
just
add that the reason for extending it till October 30th, or 31st rather, is because it would be even more confusing to kick them in place in the middle of a billing period. So that's the rationale for that.
Okay, and then I had one observation, too, because I think this is a very good discussion. We're talking about not having the penalties, and it's interesting because our community, by and large, has become so committed, so dedicated, and first having practice with conserving water to where it's truly become our way of life. It's become our habit. We don't think twice about how to conserve water. And you can see it. I was looking at the just our water production and how much we were using starting, as you know, in 2013. Acre feet, we were using 733 acre feet plus a little bit. And the first year that we went into, when the drought really started becoming clearly an issue and a real problem for us, as you recall, with all the practices and conservation that we have, we were one of the best in the state, if not the best in the state, on conserving. And that's credit to this community. So then in 2014, we had a reduction from 2013. We only used 64% from the year before. That's phenomenal. That's you. That's what we're doing. And yes, the penalties were there. But then, interestingly enough, we go along to 2015, and we still almost came out the same compared to the baseline of 2013 of 64% for the full year reduction. So then I took a look at, well, what happened then up to the data we have? And the data we have right now is up through June. And interestingly enough, even without the penalties, we're still conserving, because as of June, we're right on target, just like from the year before. In fact, better. Just taking a look at the June month and comparing it to, again, 2013, we're at only 60% use. And that's who we are now. That's our practice. That's our habit. And it's credit to everyone in this room and everyone in this community. So the surcharges and considering how they help, it appears that we don't need the surcharges to continue the good practices. I mean, that's how I interpret it. So any further discussion? Director Rice.
I would observe that this board is being asked to make that decision without the actual numbers, because it's clearly surcharges and penalties are supposed to curb use and not be a revenue source. I have no issue with that part of it. If you look at the adjustments that were made, about one-third of the surcharges is about what was adjusted, and mm-hmm. and it did take mm-hmm. a very significant amount of Mr. O'Reilly's time to deal with those waivers, and that's one of the reasons why we went that direction. We still don't know the actual numbers, though, of how many people are still going over. We must know we're billing people. We must know those numbers. We've got them. It's not extra work. They should be there somewhere in the billing. And I just object to being asked to extend this when we're still in an emergency and we are still being asked to, if we do the tracer test, we're going to be paying extra rates on top of. So I don't think there's an incentive for people to use water. I'm just saying that I don't want to make a decision without actually basing it on the facts that the district already has in their possession and just didn't provide to us and could have if we had taken the time to do an ad hoc conservation committee meeting about it. That's all.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm saying. I think whether we decide to continue not to have the penalties or have them, I'd be curious either way we go, because it seems to me, just comparing the data and how much water we're using, we have reduced. And if we've reduced, you can't have that many people out there breaking, you know, using more than their allocation and paying these huge charges they started out with a couple of years ago.
I wonder how much lower than 60% we'd be if we didn't have the people that were still overusing. I'm just saying, we don't have the numbers. It's hard to know the answers. And even Patrick, who dealt with this very intimately for a very long time of dealing with the waivers, doesn't have the exact numbers in his head. I wouldn't expect him to have them. I'm not comfortable. The data's not here for me to support not putting the surcharges back on.
You're not comfortable for not. So what does that translate to?
I do not support the motion made by Director Barringer.
Who did? Yes, we have a second. We do have, we have a motion with Director Barringer and a second from Director Sanders. Do we have any more discussion?
Just call for the question.
Okay. All right. We're ready then. All right. A roll call, please.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Director Rice?
No.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. Motion carries 4-1. Thank you. Okay, let's move on then to our next item, and that is item 9D.
Thank you, Madam President and board members. I'll introduce this, and I'll have our finance manager, Patrick O'Reilly, go over the staff report briefly with you. Going back to, I think, during Chief Miller's tenure as fire chief, it was indicated that a new fire truck is needed. Our primary unit out right now, we just got the engine rebuilt on it. And so we were using, for a period of time, the older of the two units. And so from an operational perspective, it makes, in public health and safety, it makes all the sense in the world to support purchasing a new fire truck for the fire department. Just a caveat associated with this is that it's not like you can go down to a car lot in San Luis Obispo and pick out a car and drive it home that day. This is about, once the board takes an action today, it's going to be about a year. And hopefully we can get that expedited. And so with that, I'll just turn it over to Patrick. And what he can do is describe the cost of the engine and the terms and conditions associated with the financing of this piece of equipment. And if I can answer any questions after Patrick's done, I'll be more than happy to.
Thank you.
Yeah, we also have Chief Hollingsworth here for any technical questions or any operational questions you might have. Staff is suggesting or recommending three actions with this staff report. We're recommending that you approve the purchase of a Pierce fire engine for $622,315. We're recommending that you approve a resolution authorizing the loan to Municipal Finance Corporation, and we're recommending that you authorize the general manager to sign a purchase agreement with Pierce to purchase the engine. The fiscal impact, the interest rate is 2.35%. The when we got the quote from Pierce, they actually had another lender who was willing to lend us the money at 3.14%. So by using municipal finance, we'll save a little over $6,000 over the period of the loan. The annual payments are $132,955. And the fire budget for this year already includes $134,340. So it doesn't require any budget action. That's already included in the budget. Our first out fire engine is a 2007 engine. Our second out engine is a 1998 engine. Like I said, the chief could provide more specifics, but technically our first out engine should not be more than 10 years old. So if it takes us a year to get this engine, this new engine in, our existing first out engine will be over 10 years old, and it'll move into our second out position. And that's what our objective is here. The unique thing about this purchase is that it's a sole source purchase. We didn't go out and get quotes or competitive bids. It wasn't that we didn't try, but there were components to this engine. Because of the unique nature of Cambria with the hills and the small radius turns and those kinds of things that made the fire department feel like they needed this engine, that there were no other engines that could satisfy their needs. Principally, the two top items on this slide, the independent front suspension and the pump house design that allows turns in restricted areas. That's my presentation. Do you have any questions for any of us?
Director Berenger?
When would the first payment be due on this? Do we get the fire engine first and then make the payment, or do we?
No, we have to make the payment. We have to pay when we order it, and then it's good for 20 years.
And then it's good for what?
It's good for, it's a 20-year loan. I'm sorry, 8 years. It's an 8-year loan.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions, Director Rice?
Not being a finance person, I'm glad you're here. The sale installment that we got, the $8.99 million that we got in 2014, right. We had to pay off one of the loans that we had outstanding in order to get that. That was like part of the agreement. And I believe there was part of the agreement that said that we had to notify them if we were going to incur additional debt. And I'm sorry I didn't get to you ahead of the meeting to ask that question so you could actually look at that agreement. I would really like to, and let me say right here, I am all for getting a fire engine for our folks who really do a hard job and need to have equipment that is, it's ridiculous that we have not addressed this to this point. But I do have concerns about the requirements of the other loan that we have and indebting ourselves even further when we know we've got a lot of work to do on the wastewater treatment plant. It's expensive to run a district. I understand that. And then, so I do support us getting them new equipment. I have trouble with us doing this as a sole source with just comparing to some other place that bought a Pierce truck and not getting more information about, because I'm not, this could be the best deal ever on anything that would work in this town. Without the information, though, this also could be a third again as much as we need to be spending. And I just don't know what kind of review was done other than our fire people say that this is what they need.
On the first issue, we're talking, the $8.9 million loan was in the water fund. This is in the general fund. They're different. They're legally restricted funds. So the $8.9 million has nothing to do with this. And you mentioned wastewater. That's a third fund that has nothing to do with this loan. As far as the verification of the price, it's exactly what you said. The fire department did the very best they could to identify reasonable costs. We felt like since Palo Alto had recently purchased a very similar engine, and they went through the bid process and all that, that it was reasonable to assume that our price are reasonable. But, you know, it's always possible that that's not true. There might be some used fire engine in Podunk, Alaska for $100,000 less. I don't know.
Vice President Thompson.
Yeah, I think certainly the events of the last few weeks have indicated the need to really kind of expedite this whole process. I know that the fire department looked at procurement of fire engines that I believe the County of Los Angeles went through, and again they came up with the Pierce engine, and although ours is having some different specifications, I think that I'm comfortable with the fact that the cost is very comparable to what one would have to pay if we did go out on a competitive bid. And I think again, we need to move this. We need to get the engine. We need to make sure that this community is safe. So I would move that we approve this proposal and that we direct our finance officer to move forward with it.
Second the motion with the comment that I have a great deal of confidence in Chief Hollingsworth. I know that he's a man who does his due diligence on matters like this, and I also have a great deal of confidence in our finance officer, so I'm very comfortable with the recommendation. Again, I second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded, and it seems that Chief Hollingsworth is in a position that he's wanting to make some comments, so I would like that. Also, just to acknowledge, we had no request for public comment on this item.
Thank you for bringing some of your concerns up, Director Rice. I wanted to address this really quickly for you just to hopefully alleviate any concerns. There are various ways we can go about purchasing this. We obviously looked. I worked very at length with Pat on this. We can go through the full RFP process, competitive bidding, and have multiple different agencies to do that. We can do what's called a piggyback bid, where we can actually tag on to somebody else, or we can single source this. And after a lot of research, we've chosen to go down the single source option for the options he's already indicated. However, I wanted to put some of those fears to rest. In the anticipation of possibly having to go out to RFP, we evaluated the full RFP process from a number of other cities, including LA County, Palo Alto, there's a couple, Arroyo Grande, Five Cities Fire Authority, and through at least those three, and there's another one for some reason it's evading my mind right now, at least those three, that competitive process all came back with this exact same design and very comparable within 10% cost efficiency on the same rig, same design. And even if we were going to piggyback on somebody else's RFP, which we're not doing, Pierce has already indicated that the quotes that they gave us, they would already honor the pricing they gave us, regardless of what those others would be. So I feel that from an internal aspect, we've done an exhaustive amount of research to make sure this qualified for what we need. There is a lot of justification for maintaining the same manufacturer. The fact that we have a maintenance shop here locally now means I don't have to send somebody down to Los Angeles or up north to Modesto to have it worked on. We could do that across the hill. Consistency with the same manufacturer across the fleet, and actually the majority of that apparatus is what's being used across the county right now. So I think for a number of reasons, functionally it works. The two primary reasons that were listed on there about the transmission style, the pump design housing, as you guys well know, this community was not master planned in regards to roads and things like that. And our second out engine, which is now almost 29 years old, we had to have the transmission re-geared to just get up some of those hills. And when I say that, it's an inching thing that you could probably get outside and walk up faster than getting up those hills. So that transmission, the way it's designed, allows us to, with our primary engine, to get around effectively without any problems. This is an extension of that same concept.
And thank you for that. I was at the CERT meeting where we were looking at the engine and the different things at the department, and the second engine, what would happen with that, and then what would happen, we would keep this engine, is that the plan?
Well, the now second engine, the 1988 FMC, would become surplus apparatus, and we would go through the existing district policy to get rid of that in some way, shape, or form. There's different forums out there to sell it. At this point, I actually don't know how much value that would have. We're required by NFPA to have the pump tested annually, and last year that the pump doesn't even pass that test anymore. So that doesn't mean that it's not functional, but it means it no longer qualifies as a fire engine in the eyes of insurance and ISO. And as you well know, your local insurance and the ISO rating for this community is valued on the value of that fire engine and its capability. So if it can't pass those tests, we don't get credit for it, and it affects the ISO rating for the community. That's why NFPA has the 20-year guideline. In doing this at this time, it actually comes through at a very good time, because it's going to put us back on a theoretical 10-year basis, because at this rate, if we have one in service for 10 years, it goes into backup service, we buy a new one, and now we're on the right cycle. So we would be looking at theoretically doing this 10 years from now to keep this same cycle going.
Yeah, the timing is excellent. And I think that the and which engine is it right now that's needing a repair anyway?
Our primary engine just came back after having some existing exhaustive work done, and we were running first out in the old engine. And unfortunately, there was even some electrical problems there. So we have a second and third and even fourth option in regards to how to provide that same level of service to the community. We had all those backup plans in place, and we almost had to get to that third level because of some of those issues. But luckily, we were able to get past it.
Well, I just have to say, for my part, I have every confidence in your judgment, your background on looking for certainly the most, in terms of purchase, the best buy that we feel we could have, but an engine that you feel will really keep us in good stead for the next 10 years, too. So it's pretty exciting, actually, I think.
Yes, ma'am.
Director Rice?
First, let me apologize. I've been on this board almost 4 years, and we have not even talked about this. This is the first time this has even come up since I've been on the board. We should have been doing this a long time ago. The board before us should have been doing it, but we're doing it now. Also, thank you for addressing my concerns. I do appreciate it, and I especially appreciated talking about the maintenance and that we're going to hopefully be easier to and hopefully less expensive when we need to do maintenance.
Absolutely.
And I really appreciate that. And I hope that we get a chance to do some longer range planning so that we can make sure that we get onto a cycle so that we don't end up having to do a hurry up and get this done kind of situation again. And I would suggest or submit that we probably could have dealt with all of these details if we'd had a committee that was a standing committee that dealt with the fire issues and then brought the recommendations to the board. It would shorten our meetings and make sure that all of these things could be taken care of and addressed both for the public and for the fire department. Thank you.
Director Barrier?
Yes, I support this motion, of course. The grand jury did bring this to our attention. We were working on it for a long time. I know that we've been trying to get this particular fire engine online. When months ago, when the grand jury report came out, it was clear that we were actively pursuing a grant for that particular piece of equipment. So it might be a couple of months late in that perspective, but we were very hopeful for a grant. Unfortunately, or fortunately, we've been getting grants for a lot of other things. The county's helped us get grants, and the Fire Safe Council, and all of these other issues. And it looks like, according to rumor, is that this grant probably was not going to be coming through. So let's buy the thing, and hopefully we can get grants in the future. I do know that the plan was that as a piece of equipment starts getting to their 10-year age, that's when you should be applying for grants, and possibly next time we're going to get a better deal. But in this case, let's move forward, and I support the action.
Thank you. We are ready. We have a motion and a second, but we do have a request for public comment that just came in, and I will go ahead and recognize that. Laura Schwartz.
Thank you very much. I was probably actually past turning it in, but the way the conversation was going, and don't get me wrong, I'm all in favor of a fire engine. Oh, my God, because we own property here, too, and a fire engine, and I think Chief Hollingsworth has got it pegged. I rely upon his experience of what equipment they need. The problem I'm having is that I sat through that finance meeting when the guy with the pink tie was here and we took out that loan. And my memory, unless it's being affected by the smoke, is, you know, what we did is we put up for collateral the Fiscalini, we put up our property taxes.
Never. Never.
Okay. Anyhow, the thing is, I believe in that loan, if you look through it, we can't take out more loans unless they're at least notified. And again, I could be wrong, but before you vote on something like that, I think you should really look into that document to make sure that you're not doing something that you shouldn't be doing. And again, it could be the smoke, but that's my opinion.
Thank you.
Mr. Patrick already addressed that.
Yes, you have addressed that, I believe.
Yeah, Madam President, while Patrick's coming up, can we put to rest once and for all that the Fiscalini Ranch was not put up as collateral for any loan that the CCSD has?
Cannot, will not, has never been, and can't happen.
And the second thing is, as Patrick has already explained, this is an enterprise fund purchase. Excuse me, it's a general fund purchase, not an enterprise fund purchase. The bond covenant relates only to the revenues from the enterprise fund that the loan was taken out for. It's the water fund.
Thank you for that. And
I wasn't here when the loan was obtained, and I'm not that familiar with the details of the loan, but I'll check it to make sure that there's no conflict. But I can't see that there would be, because it is the water fund as opposed to general fund.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, no further discussion. We've had the question called. Are you wanting to make further comment?
I have the agenda item from when we had the loan, and I believe that it did say that the property taxes was also promised as part of that, as part of the pay. You know, so if we couldn't cover it with the water fund, that we would have to cover it with the property taxes from the general fund. I would just like to make sure that before we sign any documents, let's make sure that we're getting everything in line, please.
Thank you. Okay, I think then we are ready for the question. Let's have a roll call, please.
Vice President Thompson?
Aye.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. Okay, we are moving now to our last item this afternoon, and that is item 9E. And shall we have General Manager Gruber introduce item 9E, please?
Yes, Madam President and board members. I'll go ahead and introduce it, then I'll let District Engineer Bob Greshens talk a little bit about it. We did get this to you late yesterday. That's why it is in a green sheet. And just for points of consistency, the SWF is up and running. It's operational, and it'll probably be a week or two before, as Bob indicated in the staff report, before the tracer study will actually start, because they need to mobilize the product and everything like that. So with that being said, Madam President and Board, 9E is authorize the general manager to execute Task Order 7 to the February 7, 2014 Engineering Services Agreement, Emergency Water Supply Project, CDM Smith, for the completion of an updated tracer study. And with that, I'll turn it over to Bob.
Thank you, okay. Jerry, Madam President, members of the board. Yes, this is Task Order 7. It's being proposed from CDM Smith. This is an updated tracer study. You may recall that one was completed back in 2014, from roughly late July into September. That was done before the sustainable water facility was constructed. So what they did is they did a recirculation type system. They laid some pipes from our wells SS1 and SS2 over to the reinjection well that was constructed at that point, add the chemical tracer that's required of the state, and then they measured that on its way back underground to determine the travel time that it takes to go from the injection well back to one of the production wells, either SS1 or SS2. That's required by the state as far as the indirect potable reuse regulations. They ran that at a rate that was around 435 gallons per minute, and they had found that it was about a 58-day travel time at that point. The state accepted that, but they wrote a conditional letter back in 2014 that said, okay, based on what the consultant provided, which included modeling and other supporting details that went along with the data that was collected, you can operate the facility at 400 gallons a minute, but we want you to repeat the test, and that is what we're up to. We are repeating the test. This time around, we have the facility built, so we are going to inject the tracer into the final product water as it goes into the injection well, and then we're going to run SS1 or SS2 at a steady rate of 400 gallons a minute so that we can simulate the same type of approach at a little lower flow rate this time to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that it has at least 60 days travel time. This is pretty detailed technically to repeat this test. CDM Smith has given a lot of thought. For example, the 400 gallons a minute will or may likely exceed our demand at times. So we're going to have to switch over to a recirculating mode when it does. We also have limited staffing, so we're not going to have a person there at all times while this test is going on, particularly in the middle of the night. So we're going to be using the recycle mode when the plant is not staffed. So we'll be shutting the plant off late in the evening and then switching over to this recycled piping. So there's cost involved
for the consulting time. That is CDM Smith's hydrogeologist. They've already done quite a bit of effort in developing a draft work plan that has to go to the state for their review and approval before we start. And then the actual getting the pipeline in place, getting the chemical feed, the chemicals, some instrumentation, and so forth. So the total cost of all that work is presented in one of the last pages, and that was their budget of that was the $1,052 amount. That is the total cost of the task order 7 that's being recommended to you today. So without any further ado, we're recommending that you do approve this task order 7 so that our general manager can execute that and we can proceed from that point on. I'd also like to clarify too a little bit is that our water department, Justice Smith and the rest of them, have done an incredible job of getting the system back up and running, but it's running in recirculation mode. So we still need to get this testing done so we can put it in production mode. But we've got it all ready to go except for the temporary pipe I mentioned and the other parts that support this this test. So if
okay.
there's any questions, I'm ready to answer.
Thank you. General Manager Gruber.
Yes, Madam President. One other item is the where will the money come from? We've set $1 million aside. If you look at under Patrick's financial manager's report for regular coastal development permit mitigation measures, and in order for us to get our regular coastal development permit, this is going to be a requirement. So that 161 will be coming from that million that was set aside. Leaving roughly $838,948 into that account. So,
correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have some requests for public comments, so we'll start first with Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Madam President. I want first to apologize to Mr. O'Reilly because that it was totally accurate on his part that was 26 months, not 1 year, that the $1 million would accumulate with surcharges and reported adjustments. So I apologize, sir. You were correct. And I was wrong. I want to raise an issue here that baffles me quite a bit. And no, in your agenda, which is not, I'm not looking at that, but there is an attachment, which is the application from Mr. Gressens to the county to extend the deadline on the CDP stuff. What is not in your agenda, however, is the response from the county. And I want to read some of that to you because it's germane to 9E. However, as stated, this is Mr. Singelwald. However, as stated in your letter, the project description is now a, quote, sustainable water facility, end quote, which would not only avoid water shortages for existing connections, but would also serve new developments. The project description in your follow-up development plan / coastal development permit application must be revised to reflect the current project description. In other words, there is a major revision of the project description, which, if you continue reading this letter, which I'm sure you all have, I had to get it through a PRR, it is due on the last day of September, about a month from now. There are two other requirements that the county is posing, including finally getting a complete response to the July 2014 letter describing the project, and also the second one is an operation summary that they need, not what the region gets, but what the county needs. Now, my question is, even though this tracer study is responding to a November 2014 regional and state water board requirement for the emergency water plant, since you are no longer planning to have simply the emergency water plant, but you are changing it so that it's a sustainable water facility, we have not heard at all, unless my memory is really going my 74 plus years, we have not as public heard at all what changes you are projecting about the facility itself in order to make that switch. And does the tracer test then simply give you information about a 2014 project, but says nothing really about what the new project will do when there is a coastal development permit project, which there isn't now? So you can understand, Madam President, I'm not just being my nasty usual self. I am, again, raising questions because you're asking us to make agreements with you based on totally insufficient information. And the 9E's nicely written up, God knows, task order 7. I mean, we hired these people for a lot of money, and they know how to print English. But what they don't deal with are the specific questions that concern us here as locals, little peons who aren't the consultants. So unless you can straighten some of this out, we're going to be paying hundreds of thousands of dollars again down the road for tracer tests on the new project, which, by the way, if you look at November 14...
Your time, your 3 minutes is up.
You have to conform, Madam President, with the operations, maintenance, and monitoring plan according to the region and the state. And I assume that plan might change with your new sustainable water facility.
Thank you. We are discussing item E, and that is a required second tracer test that we're required to take. And we're not talking about any plant. We are talking about item E. So I just want to clarify that for everyone. We have Tina Dickinson also requests public comment.
Okay, I've been in touch with the Department of Drinking Water, and it was not mentioned by either Mr. Greshens or Mr. Gruber. My questions were related to what Dr. Bessenhausen just mentioned, that the scope of the project has changed from an EWS to an SWF. I asked those questions, and I'm awaiting some response, but I can tell you this from Kurt Souza today. As for the technical merit of the treatment facility, it does not change. The tracer study is required if the plant is operated this year. We have discussed the study with the district and their consultants over the last couple of weeks. We do not have a final proposal. You guys haven't even got the final proposal in yet. You haven't even mentioned that. The plant can operate before the tracer starts, but not as a tracer test. So let's get that straight. And then Mr. Greshens had said back in February, I think, that the monies that were going to be used for these other task orders would be coming from the 5% from the Prop 84 funding. They have not received, as of July 1st, the DWR, the Urban Water Management Plan revision from 2015. You guys got a letter from the Department of Public Works dated August 16th. In which an agreement that was made, you have not been in compliance with getting the Urban Water Management Plan to the DWR on or before July 1st, 2016. If you do not have that in, which you haven't, you failed to meet the continuing eligibility requirements set forth in paragraph 14, including submission of the 2015 UWMP. As of the date of this letter, DWR has not received the 2015 update from the CCSD. Thus, the purpose of this letter is to notify you that the CCSD is in default under both the grant agreement and the funding agreement. I'm not going to go on. You have this letter in your files, but you don't have a proposal in to the DDW for the tracer test. And I really resent the fact that you're calling it the EWS General Manager. First, you start out with SWF, tracer study, we've mobilized everything. Then you call it the EWS Supply Project. My water bills for the EWS are called EWS, and there are three possible fees. Two we get, the third one is when it's producing. They're all called EWS. So how you can keep going back and forth when you don't even have all of the testing that's required for an EWS, and you've already changed the name of it to SWF, is absolutely fascinating. And I think that you need to get your information in, because you're now in default with the DWR, and you won't be getting the 5% until that information's in, and there's a problem there, and there's a problem with the DDW. You don't have a proposal in for the tracer test. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Would you like me to respond?
Mr. Greshen, you can respond. Okay. We are staying, though, to the point of this tracer test.
Yes. The report that goes to Mr. Souza and Mr. Densmore at DDW is written, and it's just going through final review, and that'll be submitted early next week. So that is completed, and that is the process we're following, is to get their review and approval of that,
before we start the tracer study. And we are following through with the recommendations of his earlier letter. That was from Mr. Souza. And that's the way we're following this up. I think a lot of these other questions, the urban water management plan, that's in process right now. We did send a letter to the county telling them that we were giving them a 60-day notice, which said that basically started the time with that completion process. So we're working our best on that. We've been very busy on the EIR that will provide a great deal of clarification to the other questions that were raised. You know, that's coming close to completion in the next week or two. And, you know, our consultant and staff have just been working away at that. So I think a lot of these questions will become answered as that document goes out for detailed public review.
Thank you. And General Manager Gruber?
Yes, and as part of the EIR, we've done a very detailed demand forecast working with Madouse Water Management. And it would have been premature to get the urban water management plan out prior to having those updated demand forecasts, which are a critical component of the urban water management plan. So now that we have those, we'll have an urban water management plan that actually has up-to-date demand forecast. What I would like to say is if the public has any questions about, because we're really very transparent, these letters go to the board, they're made public, and if you have any questions, just call us and we'll sit down with you and talk about it and go over it with you. The state does charge the CSD for inquiries. It's not free. And so they're gracious enough to answer the public's questions. But we do get invoices from Regional Water Quality Control Board in many instances for their staff time. And so it does cost the district money when they have to respond to public questions. That's part of their job. But if we had the opportunity to answer those questions, it would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to move to any board discussion. Director Barringer?
Yeah, I share some of the public's frustration in trying to get something through. You know, the idea of using water from air and things like that were definitely considered, but governments are restricted from using experimental technologies and all these other things. And for the year that I was president, the frustration was extreme. And I do believe, isn't it true, that this time next year, it's likely that direct reuse is going to be allowed, and we wouldn't even have to do this tracer test? So this is, and I'd like an answer on that too, because the regulations that demanded a 60-day travel time in the ground is going to be abandoned in September of 2017. If you can confirm that, that would be that's the idea.
I've heard that, and I've also heard it before. So I can't say for certain what the state's going to do with those requirements. They've been pushed out in time several times in the past. So we just can't bank 100% on that actually happening. So,
but now at least we'll be very safe.
Someday I think it will happen, but I don't know.
And as the water comes out of the plant, it's certainly drinkable. I think I saw a picture of Ms. Robinette actually drink some of that water.
I can vouch firsthand. It tastes very good.
Yes, we've all had a sip.
So we might have to continue to dirty it. We need to fulfill the requirements of this particular test, and I would support the proposal.
Thank you. Director Rice?
I just have a couple of questions. The tracer test is supposed to show that the water quality will be at the level that the Division of Drinking Water considers to be safe, right?
Well, it's a travel time requirement.
Right, and the reason they have that, the reason there's that policy is in place is that's what they had believed would make the water safe. No?
It was really, to me, kind of a added safety factor
We do the testing for public safety, proved the water safe already with the existing permits. They wanted to have a 60-day travel time. It used to be 6 months at one time. They reduced it down to 60 days. But it, to me, in my discussions with the state regulatory people, it's really a response time they wanted to have. They wanted to have a 2-month response time in case there was any concern over the operation, that they had that 2 months built in. And that's essentially the answer I got from talking to them in detail about this in the past.
Okay. So and we would want to run it under the parameters under which we normally would be running this plant, yes?
Yes.
Because the point is to test it in the real world situation so you know what's actually going on, right?
Right, and that's
to gather the data, and then we're going to use the data in the hydrogeological model, hopefully to update it if it still needs to be worked on to be more accurate, so we kind of know what we're looking at for our basin, right?
Correct. The hydrogeologist will prepare a summary report at the end of this, and that'll in turn go to the state for their review.
And that report is included in this?
Yes.
And is there any reporting that has to be done to the DDW or to the regional board or anybody that they are also including in this? Because I looked back at the tracer study we did before, which I know was a slightly different situation since we didn't have the plant yet, and that one only cost us about $58,000 if you don't include the design and drilling of the well for the injection well. But I don't know why this is so much more expensive, and I just want to make sure that what we're doing is this is appropriate in time and appropriate in place and appropriate in what we're asking to be done, what we're getting for our money, because this is a lot of money that's out of a mitigation fund that we might need all of, in theory. I mean, that's why we put it aside, so that it would be there, and I just... These are the concerns, and would we be running this? Are we under the conditions where normally we would be turning it on, all things being equal?
Well, I guess in the cost, approximately a third of that cost is probably related to the piping, the chemical feed system, and you know, some of the facilities have to go in on a temporary basis to run the test. The rest is pretty much the consulting time of the hydrogeologists and others that are involved in the field work. So I'm not quite sure I absorbed all your question.
We took all the temporary stuff out from the last tracer test?
Yes, that was back in 2014. It was rented.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
It was all above ground stuff, temporary stuff, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And we have to have the temporary stuff again?
We have to bring it back in.
Don't you have to have that? Because what isn't the tracer study to just ensure that the travel time after it leaves the first the microfilter, then the RO, and then the UV, that it's a 60-day travel time to get to the production well?
Well, yes. From the point where it's put in at the reinjection well to where it comes out at the either SS1 or SS2
or two.
Production well has to be at least 60 days.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's required.
Right.
That's required by the DDW, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Then I'm confused. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Then why wouldn't we be using the pipes that we would normally be using if we just had the plant on to reinject the water? Because we have a regular, permanently installed pipe to do that, right?
We are doing that, and we have a recirculation pipe in addition to that that's going in as a rented pipe.
When we are not going to staff it.
This is a 24/7 operation once you start it. So we didn't have the staffing there to run three shifts, so we'll run it with our existing staff without a hire either a contract operator or more operators by switching over to the recycle pipeline in the evening when the plant is not running. So we need an operator there at the plant when it's operating, and to run it 24/7 in that mode would have been costlier because of the fact of the staffing limitation that we have.
So we had several discussions with the consultant on this as we were developing this task order on that very subject, and that's what we ended up settling in on.
Madam President?
Yes.
I'd be willing to move that
okay.
we authorize the general manager. No.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Authorize the general manager to execute task order 7 to the February 7th, 2014 Engineering Services Agreement Emergency Water Supply Project CDM Smith for completion of an updated tracer study.
Second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. We have a request here, much after the fact, a public comment, and really, if is that all right to pass? Thank you. Okay. And I'll try to be clear about that, too. When you want public comment, you need to get it in at the time we call it. So I thank you for that. Okay, so then we have had discussion. We have a motion. We have a second on this item now. Do we have any further discussion? Okay. Then we want to approve this with a second.
I just have one. I'm sorry. I just have one more question. I know we're trying to get out of here fast. I just really want to make sure that I understand what's happening. There's been some upgrades at the San Simeon field, and I know that I'm looking at a report from the water department that says they installed some, that Alpha Electric had installed some monitoring equipment that would make the tracer test easier to perform. Has CDM been out to see what's out there right now before they gave us the amount of money that it's going to cost?
They're aware of what's happening out there.
Okay.
That's Alpha Electrical is helping to
remotely
monitor the existing
which is needed.
Well field.
Yeah, which is all needed. Yeah. I just want to make sure that they're not thinking they're going to have to install stuff that's already there. That's what I'm asking
that's
about.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. I can call the question if you're ready.
Okay, everyone's ready? All right, let's have a roll call, please.
Director Berenger?
Aye.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Vice President Thompson?
Is now absent.
President Robinette?
Aye. So the motion passes 4-0. Now, we have one more decision to make this afternoon, given the fact that we did modify the agenda, and that is that we now need to decide, the four of us, on a time and date certain to finish and complete the rest of the agenda, and so we need to look at our calendars.
Madam President, may I make a suggestion that when you look at your calendar, I think it should be as early as possible, but I believe it should be after the Labor Day weekend. This facility is booked until then. So I know we can't do it within the 5 days, so it might require re-notification, but I'm anxious to do it as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. I also suggest that since this was one of the rare evening meetings that we have, that we do it again in the evening. And our regular meeting in September will be a day meeting anyway, so that's my suggestion, and I'll check my calendar.
Okay, and I agree. Remember, the whole reason for our attempt, at least, to shorten the meeting was because we are, of course, in such a situation with the chimney fire. And so after Labor Day would certainly be my thought, too, because we can't just turn around and do this again next week. While I'd like to think that the chimney fire would be 99% contained by then, I don't get at the rate we're going, I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
So we're looking after a suggestion after Labor Day.
Madam President, I move that we continue this meeting to 4 p.m. on Tuesday, September the 6th.
September the 6th? All right.
Oh. Second.
No, what?
I've got a poker game that day.
A poker game? No, not poker game. It's a TV
okay,
on, of
fine.
Course it is.
And that motion would also include continuing all of the items on the agenda to
yes.
that date.
Yes.
So, did you want to restate that? Yes.
Just making it clear that that motion included continuing all of the items on the agenda to that date.
Yes,
that's
so
correct.
We will pick these items up only, right? Okay.
Including the closed session.
Including the closed session.
Could the closed session be at 3?
At 3.
That's fine.
Like
me.
We had it before
yeah.
today.
Yeah, that way
yes, we would have closed session at 3, and then we would complete this agenda that day, not add things to it, because then we have a regular meeting coming up in September. So Director Sanders, did you want to restate your suggestion?
I'll restate the motion. I move that we continue this meeting to Tuesday, September the 6th, with a closed session at 3 p.m. and the regular session to convene at 4 p.m. with all of the items on the agenda we have today continued to that time.
I'll second that.
All right.
Reluctantly.
Any discussion?
Thank you.
All right. Are we ready then? For ready for the vote?
Sure.
Okay. We'll have a roll call.
Director Sanders?
Aye.
Director Barringer?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
President Robinette?
Aye. And so we will be back to complete this meeting at 3 o'clock on Tuesday, September 6th. So thank you very much for coming, and the meeting is adjourned for today.